Bert, where's my pointer? That's what you said last time. And lo and behold, it's there. All right. All right. Well, you know what this means, or do you? This means we're going to do some slides, some pictures, at the beginning of the lesson this morning. See if I can pull up this PowerPoint. Remember this picture? About 8 months ago, I did a lesson on David and Goliath, and we focused in on the character of David. And that was the very narrow focus of the lesson on David and Goliath. So we're going to broaden that focus this morning and look at Saul and look at Eliab and look a little bit at David. And so the last lesson was focused in on how David met his responsibilities when he was alone. Remember, he was shepherding his father's sheep and he was taking care of them. And he killed the lion and the bear, and he was responsible for his and accountable to God for his shepherding of sheep. And because he was meeting his responsibilities in the quiet and solitude of shepherding, he was also of that character that he would meet his responsibilities when it came to something as difficult as going out to fight Goliath. And we made that point that that's the essence of character. It's what you do when nobody's looking. It's how you behave and how you act when you really can't be held accountable for your behavior by anyone. That really determines your character. What are you like when you're alone? What are you like when no one sees you? Are you doing what you're supposed to be doing when nobody else knows except you and God? That really helps you see where your character is and where you may need to make some improvements on. So that was the point of the last lesson on David and Goliath, and today we'll focus on something completely different. But I wanted to show some pictures here. I did visit that location in the Valley of Elah where David fought Goliath. So I thought I'd take you through a little bit of the geography here that we're looking at. This is Judah in the time of David, and you see Jerusalem all the way up at the very top of Judah here, and Bethlehem right below. David was from Bethlehem. And you see Hebron down here. This is where Abraham lived. And this is actually where David's kingdom, where he reigned from for 7 years at the beginning of his kingdom, down in Hebron. And then he moved it up to Jerusalem later on because it would also bring the northern tribes more close to him and to the worship that he was setting up in Jerusalem. Down here you see Beersheba. You might remember the phrase in the Bible, from Dan to Beersheba. Dan is way up at the farthest north. It's not on this map. And Beersheba was viewed as the lowest point in the nation of Israel. Over here you see Gath, and this is where Goliath was from. And you see the land of the Philistines over here. They were the coastal people, and they were pagans, of course. They were always Israel's enemies, and they were definitely the enemies of Saul and also the enemies of David. Here is a term you might not be familiar with, or a place, Shoko. We're going to talk about that this morning. The battle of David and Goliath was actually fought between Shoko and Azekah. And it was that valley where that battle was fought. Let's see if there's anything else. I think that's about it. To just give you an idea of the geography or where we're talking about. We're talking about this being fought down in Judah. Not up in the north, but down in Judah where David was from. Here's a picture of the Elah Valley that I found on the internet. I didn't take this picture, but I thought it was very useful to see the nature of this battle here. This line that's going out actually says Israelite camp, but I couldn't get it all on the slide there. So you see here the Elah Valley in the middle, and you see these little hills. This is the Judah lowlands. Jerusalem was in the highlands. It was much higher. And when you came down from Jerusalem, you went into the Judah lowlands, which were small hills. And then finally, you'd get to the coastal plain, which were no hills at all. So these are the lowlands in here. And these mountains or these hills are not very tall. But you'll see that you have Soko over here, and you have Azekah is off the slide way over here.
And this, the scriptures say in 1 Samuel 17, which is, by the way, where you might want to turn to for our reading this morning. In 1 Samuel 17, that the Philistines camped between Soco and Azekah, these two hills. So this is what we think it looked like. The Philistine camp was over here. The Israelite camp was over here on these hills and those hills. Kirbet Kaiapha is actually a tell, and I talked about that last time. These are mounds that have been destroyed and built up and destroyed and built up. And this was actually a fortress that David built. Kirbet Kaiapha was a fortress, right? And we're not really sure why he built it there, other than the possibility that this was where he killed Goliath. And this was probably an avenue for the Philistines to come through and attack Israel. And so he built a fortress right here in order to set as a guard and a watch for the possibilities of the Philistines coming toward him, or toward Israel. Here's another picture from a little bit different vantage point. So here you see Soco, you see the Judean hills. Up here, way up here to the north and to the east is Bethlehem. You see Soco here. Azekah is, you might not be able to see that, but it's pointing down to here. This is where the other hill was, and this is the Elah Valley in between. And here's the brook where David picked up the five smooth stones. So David would have been over here on this side, and he would have crossed over the brook and met Goliath right out here in the middle of the Elah Valley. This is where we stopped. This is where our bus stopped, right here at this little intersection here of these two roads. And we traveled by foot down through the valley to the brook, and we walked up the brook that David picked up his stones from. Here's the picture I took, just standing in the middle of the valley as you look up towards the east. You're looking, I say up, but it's towards the east. And you see those two hills on either side. That's probably where the armies of Israel on the left and the armies of the Philistines on the right. And it just shows a little bit of perspective there from the floor of the valley. Here's a picture I found on the internet. This is not what we saw. We didn't see any water at all in the brook, because this is the rainy season. And in the dry season, the brook dries up completely. But you can see the people here, they're picking up their five smooth stones, no doubt. And then here's a picture of Royce Chandler and Robert Ogden that I took on our trip. And you can see how dry the brook is here. And Royce and Robert are discussing, no doubt, the geography of the battle between Israel and the Philistines. And then here's a picture I found, too, that I think really helps you to see what it looks like. You've got the Philistine camp. This is actually, yeah, see, you're actually looking from the south now. So the Philistine camp is here. The Israelite camp is up there. You see the Elah stream going through. You see how David would have crossed over the Elah brook and met Goliath out in the middle there. All right, so I think that's all I have on pictures. But that gives you a little bit of an idea of the geography that we're looking at. Okay, let's turn to 1 Samuel chapter 17. And let's do some practical applications, different than the ones we did last time. There's so many in this text, it's amazing. I had like 10, and I whittled it all down to a much smaller number of practical applications. But this text is rich with instruction, I think. And so what we're looking at, let's read in verses 4 and following. A champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits in a span. We think that was 9.5 feet. A cubit's 18 inches, span's half a cubit, so we're saying 9.5 feet. So you can understand how dominating his appearance was. And by the way, this champion warfare, it's interesting to look at the history of that. You see some of this champion warfare where one man will come out and challenge one man from the other country or nation. It really originated in the Grecian and Roman territories. And we think that the Philistines came from there. They were seafaring people. And they lived on the coast, and they operated their ships. They were seafarers. And we think they came from that area and came across the Mediterranean, actually went down to Egypt. There's references to the pharaohs down in Egypt defeating what sounds like the Philistines. And so they were moved out or pushed out of the Egypt area and came up the coast of Palestine, what we call now Palestine or Israel. So that's how they ended up on the coast of Israel. All right, so let's read on in verse 5. It says he had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed with scale armor, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. He also had bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. The shaft of the spear was like a weaver's beam, and the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. His shield carrier also walked before him. And he stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, "Why do you come out to draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine and you servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me." Now, you know he's calling Saul out here. You get that? You know, isn't there a man? You know, are you not servants of Saul? Is there not a man who is willing to come out? He's calling Saul out. He's the captain of the Philistines, and he's calling Saul out as the king of Israel. He says, "If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants." Now, they violated that. They didn't keep that agreement at all. When David killed Goliath, you know what they did. They fled. They didn't keep their agreement. They had no intention of keeping their agreement because they didn't expect to lose. Kind of reminds me of last year's, or 2 years ago, the election. But that's, I don't want to go that down that path. Didn't expect to lose. All right. Again, the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." And when Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now, David was the son of the Ephraimite of Bethlehem in Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons. And Jesse was old in the days of Saul, advanced in years among men. The 3 older sons of Jesse had gone after Saul to the battle, and the names of the 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and the second him, Abinadab, and the third, Shammah. David was the youngest. Now, the 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock at Bethlehem. So this was not a journey that David was unaccustomed to making. He would go back and forth. He would tend to his brothers. His father would send him to tend to his brothers. And so that's what his father does on this particular occasion as well. It says the Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days and took his stand. And that's the scripture I have up on the board. So I want to make a practical application from that. 40 days, morning and evening. 40 days. 80 times Goliath came out, armies on both sides, as we showed, and he comes out and down and he calls out to the armies of Israel 40 days, twice a day, despising them, demeaning them, calling them whatever he's calling them, weak. Send a man out, and no one's coming. Saul doesn't come out, no one's coming out. And so here's a practical application that I thought of, and maybe you would think of some others in connection with this as well. But I look at the character of Saul here. And because Saul was unwilling to deal with the sins in his life, in 1 Samuel 16, it says in verse 14 that God took his spirit away from Saul. And so now Saul was without God because of the sins that he was unwilling to deal with in his life, the sins of pride and arrogance against God, disobedience against God. Because he was unwilling to deal with those sins in his life, God took his spirit away from him. And so now what's Saul going to do? He doesn't have God to lean on. He knows that. He knows that in his heart, that God, he's not right with God. And so does he call upon God to help him? Does he have faith in God to deliver him? Of course not. And so as a result of that, he just stands there and does nothing while God and the armies of Israel are being despised and defamed by Goliath. Now, I contrast that with 1 Samuel 14, if you want to turn back a couple of pages. Look in verse 47. of 1 Samuel 14. 1 Samuel 14, verse 47. Now when Saul had taken the kingdom over Israel, he fought against all his enemies on every side, against Moab, the sons of Ammon, Edom, the kings of Zobah, and the Philistines. And wherever he turned, he inflicted punishment. He acted valiantly and defeated the Amalekites and delivered Israel from the hands of those who plundered them. Interesting. So what's Saul's problem? He's been victorious. God has been with him and he's been giving him victory after victory after victory. But this time, he just stands there and does nothing. And so to me, that's the application. When you're unwilling to deal with sin in your life, when you're unwilling to really address the issues that you have, and that pride gets a hold of you like it got a hold of Saul, and you won't hear it, you won't think it, you won't address it, you just become blind to the sin that's in your life, then God's going to take His Spirit away from you, and you're not going to be able to call upon God. You're not going to have the faith that you need to have that God is going to bless you and help you when you encounter your various difficulties in life. You're going to become like Saul, who once had great courage and once was with God and once was victorious and because God was with him, and now he doesn't have the courage, he doesn't have the faith to stand against this particular battle because he knows deep down in his heart he's not right with God. So I think that's a good warning to us to look at this situation, see how weak we can become, to see how uncharacteristic we can become in our lives. Once we've known God, once we've had the power of God, we've tasted the powers of the age to come, as Hebrews chapter 6 says, we've partaken in the Holy Spirit, we've been close to God, and now there's sin in our lives and there's a doubt. There's a doubt there. There's a lack of certainty because deep down we know there's something between us and God that we're not willing to put away. And that's what happened with Saul here. He wasn't willing to repent of his sins. He wasn't really willing to turn to God and humble himself before God. And as a result of that, he had no courage, no faith to fight the giant. Read on with me. We'll get down to verse 25 for the next application. Let's begin reading again in verse 23. As David was talking with the armies of Israel, the men there, behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke these same words, and David heard them. And when all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. And the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who is coming up? Surely he is coming up to defy Israel. And it will be that the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel." So I thought, in connection with the last point, that it might be worth making this application as well. Because Saul refused to put his trust in God to protect him, because he refused to put his trust in God to protect him and to give him the victory, he ended up what? Having to choose to manipulate the situation through worldly methods. He couldn't go to God. He couldn't trust in God because his faith was weak, because he was sin in his life. So he couldn't call upon God in trust and faith. So he ended up coming up with a worldly method of dealing with this situation. What I'll do is I'll bribe somebody else instead of meeting my responsibilities. I'll bribe somebody else to do the job for me. So I thought that was worth at least thinking about in our lives in terms of the way we handle our problems, the way we handle the issues that come up to us. We can go with God and we can do things His way, because we're close to Him and we're